Welcome to another Directions Magazine podcast. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief. On today's podcast, I had the good fortune to sit down with Rob Zetz, the Senior Vice President for Intelligence and Homeland Security at Leidos at the GUN Symposium in Tampa. Many of you may not have heard of Leidos, but the company was formed recently after SAIC split into two distinct corporations. My discussion with Mr. Zetz focuses on smallsats and the commercialization of remote sensing. Mr. Zetz has had a distinguished career, which is one reason why I wanted to interview him. He's worked as the technical executive at the NGA, the deputy undersecretary of preparedness and national protection at the Department of Homeland Security, and the deputy associate director of the U.S. Secret Service, as well as a deputy director at the National Reconnaissance Office. I hope you enjoy our discussion. So, Rob, just want to really focus in on small satellite technology. We saw the GUN Forward presentations on smallsats. So it seems like the commercial smallsat industry just virtually came out of nowhere within the last 5 years. They seem to have hit a window of opportunity between the time Digital Globe and GeoEye merged and the startup companies like Planet IQ, Planet Labs, Skybox, Earthcast, those guys. Where's your perspective on whether that's going to be a real burgeoning community, or whether it's still going to take a long, slow slope up to the area where we see true commercialization?
I think it's going to accelerate very quickly. I think that the analogy for me is, if you remember what happened with Keyhole, and then how that was purchased by Google, and then Google Earth came into being. Initially, there was a lot of excitement about it, but there were also some skeptics who said, why would people outside of defense, intelligence, homeland security, why would they need that kind of a capability? And of course, many of the people who thought that we would not see that expand were shocked to see over the years. Now we're up over, I believe, over 800, 900 million people that are using the free version of Google Earth on a daily basis. Yeah. It seems to be there's almost an unquenchable thirst for geospatial information by the public, by really all sectors.
Yeah, one of the things we were surprised at seeing was that the venture community is involved. Do you see Leidos getting more into that business, or other defense contractors saying, oh, wow, look what these guys are doing, maybe we ought to be in it too?
Well, Leidos is particularly interested in the use of the data streams. Yeah. And so, as you know, for decades, we've been a company that you could turn to say, I've got a disparate set of sources of information. Some are live or real time, some are near real time, some are maybe latent. How do we bring all that information together? How do we correlate it? How do we normalize it? How do we enrich it? How do we georectify it? How do we then make it useful to the end user in the most user-friendly way that we can? And that's when we think about, and we're excited to see this increase in awareness and also now the diversity of these new sources of information. We see that, we applaud that, and we also know that in order to put it into context and to deliver activity-based intelligence, there's going to need to be that sort of middleware, if you will. And by that I mean integrating the information, being able to understand the change that's occurred in that information and presenting it in a user-friendly way to that analyst or that operator.
Yeah, so that brings up the other interesting question, which is the change detection aspect, which is, you know, we used to think we had a big data problem before with just GOI and Digital Globe. Now, with all these different sensors up there, some of which can be hot swapped, you know, almost in real time, we're going to have a real multi-int problem, but not the multi-int we used to think of, but multi-remotely sensed Earth observation system sensors.
That's right.
And to be able to run an algorithm to do change detection presents a huge problem now for the analyst.
Well, you're exactly right, and I think that, in my day, in our day, as we both sit here with a little bit of gray in our hair, all right, when people thought multi-int, they typically only thought about signals intelligence and imagery intelligence, and could those things be tipping and queuing each other. Of course, that's really just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, multi-int includes open sources, it includes foreign social media, includes all of the above. Now, if we just define first from a geospatial standpoint, because there's so many different phenomenologies that can be collected, and at so many different resolutions and scales, and even still formats, although we're moving to more of a common format. How do you pull all that together? And again, our firm, among other firms, we do have ways to do that. I mean, I think that one of the things we talk to our customers about is Digital Edge, which is a capability that does allow any type of feed to come in, to be normalized, to be enriched, to be correlated, and then be presented.
So as we introduce more sensors, and I'm thinking sensors that are location-based, whether it's biosensors, whether it's weather sensors, whether it's any of those things, they all have to be analyzed and distilled. I get the feeling that if you presented this even to an analyst, they'd get confused. You know, we almost have to give them the client, whether it's the warfighter or an Intel senior. They want the answer. They don't want just more data. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to approach that problem?
Well, I think if you roll the clock back a few years and remember when we first started talking about hyperspectral imagery and hyperspectral cubes, once you got past the first problem, which was how do you move that through a pipe that's bandwidth is insufficient to move a hyperspectral cube, then the question became, well, how do we make sense out of this? And the idea at first was, well, we'll just have image scientists who are steeped in knowledge in hyperspectral, and they'll do the work, and it won't be something that the analyst ever has to look at. I think two things have happened. I think one is we were finding that the new generation that's coming to work in all of these intelligence agencies, and certainly I would say at NGA, they are adept at and understand the diversity of these sensors.
Multidimensional.
Think differently. That's one. And the other is, frankly, as you know, the technology has improved to the point now where that we'll run the algorithms on that, in this case, hyperspectral, and then from that then be able to display it in a more user-friendly way. But let's not lose the point you and I just talked about a moment ago. We don't want to display just that sensor output, even if it's user-friendly, as a standalone. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's important, it's interesting. An engineer would say that it's necessary but insufficient. What you really want to do is you want to integrate it and put it in context with all the other information that's available. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the magic, then, that an analyst really should come to expect, almost demand, that they're always going to see information put in context with the other sources that are available. Myriad geoint sources and phenomenologies, but also all of the other intelligence disciplines and all the open sources that are available.
Let me switch gears just for a second and get your perspective on the changing mission of NGA. They seem to want to push more things down to people that put their stuff into open source, put it on GitHub, more interested in working with municipalities. is that a role they're comfortable doing and gearing up for, and as Tish Long provided that adequate vision that we can actually see it working at the local level?
Not only is it something they're comfortable doing, it's something they're already doing.
Yeah.
As you know, I mean, this is something that Ms. Long, as she's standing on the shoulders of each of the directors that came before her, and her vision that she articulated back in October of 2010, it's being realized. I think yesterday in her presentation, it was really exciting because she talked about not only the idea of ingest of myriad sources of information, not just GeoWind. She talked about having all the other contributory ints, if you will, intelligence disciplines and open sources come together. She talked about how that would then be used for not just looking at what is happening today or what happened in the past, but she talked about where we're going to go next, and she calls it anticipatory analysis. Mm-hmm. That's a really exciting field. Exciting not only for the industry, because we all have ideas about how we can help with that, but as you know, I still have many ties and close ties, colleagues, including with the young analysts there. They're very excited about that. There's a buzz about that in the agency, that it's going to be about what comes next. It's going to be about anticipating what comes next.
Yeah, there's a lot of anticipatory was a word I wasn't totally familiar with. I've heard predictive analytics is one. I think it's a very similar type of thing. And it's those kind of analyses that I'd love to see pushed out more, because that is the answer, more or less.
Well, it's obviously, no one is saying that doing forensics is not needed. Forensics are critically important, and so knowing what has happened is absolutely critical. Knowing what's going on right now is absolutely critical, because if an analyst or an operator is involved in helping a decision maker or an action taker to be able to know what to do now, knowing what's happening now is critical. But this idea of being able to say we can forecast or predict or, as Ms. Long says, anticipate what's going to happen, that is so important, because you can maybe prevent or preclude the need for a military action, or maybe stop something through a diplomatic demarche before it actually turns into a military action. That's where she's headed. Geospatial is the foundation that everything else is tied to. So if Ms. Long can move the whole community forward towards anticipatory analysis, I think it's great for everybody. Our firm has got capability in that regard. We have, for example, we've got things along the lines of predictive analytics. We call automated behavioral analyses, which we've proven. If you're looking at open source material as well as other materials, you could start to look at what's happening between actors, between players, between people, and start to then say, okay, there are antecedents to that behavior, and that antecedent and that behavior is going to lead to this consequence. So we can start to forecast that there's going to be X, Y, or Z will happen based on what we're seeing. That's the kind of thing that we're very excited to show in GA.
And along those lines, another thing she mentioned, and I think Lattos is into this as well, is the cyber location nexus. Mm-hmm. And whether we can truly apply location technology to a cyber problem. How do you see that playing out, or is it more of a pipe dream at this point?
I don't think that's a pipe dream at all. And for your audience, of course, it's really important to know not only in virtual space where things are playing out, but then if you intend to do something about it, whether it be interdiction, an arrest, or maybe something even more dramatic, you need to know exactly where this is emanating from. And so,
can we trace it back?
Yes,
well?
I believe that we will find that is doable. And in our firm, I'm sure you know, we are one of the leading firms in the intelligence community in terms of cyber capability. We're the agencies in the intelligence community that are most responsible for that really turn to Leidos. It is an area that our operations manager who works cyber is looking at. In fact, we've had early dialogue with the United States Geospatial Intelligence Foundation to talk about the cyber GEOINT nexus. And we're going to continue those dialogues, and who knows where it goes. You could maybe see in the future a community of interest and a working group stood up by the foundation to try to drive that forward.
Do the missions then of the three-letter agencies get confused, where maybe cyber was more of a in the realm of the NSA versus the NGA? Do you see any of those missions getting confused, or can they work it out?
Well, I don't think that that they're confused today. I think in maybe years past, particularly pre-9/11, if you had one agency that was doing more than, let's say, geospatial or imagery work, there might be another agency that is considered an all-source agency to question it. I think today we're past that. I think today that everybody understands, for example, that GEOINT is ubiquitous. And so I may be a HUMINT operator. I may be a National Clandestine Service operator. And I'm going to know that my work has to ride on a GEOINT foundation. I would expect as a HUMINT or SIGINT or an all-source analyst that an agency like NGA's that they've empowered their workforce to have access to all information so that as they're looking at geospatial, they see it in context. Now, that would only lead to better geospatial intelligence analysis. I think that same applies to cyber. I think that if you talk to NSA or Cyber Command, they are obviously trying to understand how to use geospatial more effectively regarding cyber, but I think that they would say that, hey, who's the subject matter expert for geospatial intelligence? It's NGA. They are our functional manager. Mm-hmm. We want them to be thinking about how do they relate to this virtual world, this cyber world, and how can they empower cyber analysts and cyber operators to be more effective.
So So maybe one last question, and it has to do with what General Clapper said, era of declining budgets. We're not going to only do more with less, we're going to do less with less. I thought that was a really cogent statement that he made. What kind of pressure does that put on a company like Leidos, where you've got to be very cost-effective in what you provide to the government? And I'm just curious, how are you going to manage that type of environment?
Well, true. I mean, what any firm has to do is make sure that we are best value for that customer, that we're coming in at a price point that's going to be able to meet their need and their budget constraints. But I also think it offers an opportunity for a firm like Leidos. No good leader wants to, agency leader wants to preside over the graceful decline of their capabilities. They want to do at least as well as they're doing today, and preferably more. Well, you can't keep doing the same thing you've ever done with the declining budget, as Jim Clapper stated, and expect, you know, it's going to be the same. So you're going to have to do something different. That's where I think a firm like Leidos really shines, because we can come in with innovative, novel, new approaches to answering not only today's problem, but what they're worrying about at night, what's next. So if we can come in at the right price points with new and new ideas, change initiatives, we think that that's something that will be not only accepted, but adopted.
Great. Fantastic. Thanks very much.
Well, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for joining us today on another Directions Magazine podcast. If you'd like to comment about my interview with Rob Zeitz, write to me at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks again, and be sure to tell a friend.